Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 25th. I'm Ray Graff. It's that time of the month again. It's the gardening show. We'll talk plant care, how to get the most out of your garden today. Joining us, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They are here to answer your questions, and you know this is a popular program. So best to call now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Bob and Fred and your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, and we welcome back Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. If you have a question about your yard or your garden or, some shrubs, whatever, 1-800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but that number, that important number, write it down, I'll wait, is 1-800-348-2551. Bob and Fred, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back.
It's nice to be back on a more normal summer day than we've been having the last few weeks.
Absolutely.
It definitely feels good.
It's not 100 degrees out there today.
Today's a classic classic summer.
Nice day.
I don't mind telling you, fellas, that Greg is not here, so you'll have to both work a little bit harder today.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
Yep. 1/6 a piece. A little
All
harder.
Right, and then All we right. got it.
All right, let's start out with an email, and then we'll jump right in on the phones here. This one came in some time ago from Teresa in Richmondville. Teresa writes, "My in-laws have many tall, mature Colorado blue spruce trees on the property that serve as a visual noise barrier from the road. They all show dieback starting at the base from what I assume is a disease pest issue. What do you think this is? Can it be treated? And if not, any recommendations for replacement? Something evergreen, hardy, and fast-growing." And that is from Teresa in Richmondville.
Yep, what do you think, Fred?
The disease, it is a disease. It's pretty straightforward. Colorado blue spruces have really been getting hit really hard for a number of years with a disease called needle cast. It's a fungus. Years when you have that wet spring and kind of damp coolness that we had, it just makes it a little bit more, it runs a little bit harder in terms of getting more a spread of that disease. But they can be treated. Unfortunately, no great environmental organic method to control that disease. So if there's still more foliage on the tree than not, then you would want to have it sprayed. That is really the only way to control it. But the good news is that it is very effectively controlled with the right product. You'll have to call a professional. They'll literally come and they'll, use a...
It does have to be at a very specific time, though, right? It's got to be at bud break in
it
the
is,
spring.
It's spring. Yeah, it's a spring
application.
It doesn't
do any good to spray them now,
I don't think you're
going to
get much out of it, no.
So will the tree die until next spring?
No, it usually takes several years to really start to decline. A lot of times the disease is actually running rampant on a tree way before people ever notice
it. Right.
And it kills interior needles first, so it sort of works its
the
way from the inside.
Okay.
And the new growth looks
okay. That's so interesting.
So
what's
people think, oh, the tree's looking great.
It's called needle cast because the needles are cast off the tree.
That's so weird. Now, we have a tree, and I have no idea what sort of evergreen it is. It's been in our yard. It was very small, 3 feet, 4 feet high when we moved in. It's enormous now.
Okay.
And in the last year or two, some of the interior needles are dead, basically. Not all of them, but a good bit of them.
Is it blue?
No.
Color
no.
or just solid green?
It's just a green.
Sometimes they lose needles on the inside just because they're shading themselves, too.
That's true.
My neighbor said she had a tree cut down and said that tree was literally, the one that she had cut down was literally choking a couple of other trees, including that one.
Yeah, and that could sometimes cause that. But one way to test it is that needle cast disease is very, very prevalent on the Colorado blues that we talked about in the email, but also that's also on Colorado, and Colorado is very green.
Okay.
But you'll always know it's a Colorado if you just go there and sort of grab the foliage, and if it sort of bites you,
sticky.
A little sticky, kind of pricks you a little bit, That's going to definitely be probably a Colorado.
It's really done a job on Douglas firs, too.
Yeah, there's another different pathogen.
They're almost gone.
But needle cast also affects Douglas fir. Not the same pathogen. Right. It's a slightly different pathogen, but the same exact thing. It's a fungus, and it kills from the interior out, and it's treatable if you catch it early on, and you still have more foliage on the tree than not. But once you get to the point where it's half dead or more, the tree is a takedown. And then you could plant something if they wanted to have that same kind of role. A Norway spruce does really, really well.
It's a green spruce, but it doesn't seem to have the problem.
Yeah, it does a lot better, and it's fast-growing, so you kind of maybe start to phase out some of those Colorado blue with some Norways. And then the ones that are maybe still looking pretty good, those are the ones to maybe, sort of treat.
I'm not sure I'm panicked about this one yet because it has extensive new growth. I mean, there's a lot of new...
Yeah, it's probably all right.
Especially since that other tree came down a few months ago. It is really...
Okay.
We'll see. I'll take your
picture. Send me a photo.
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, and then we'll get it figured out.
All right, the phone lines are jumping here, so let's get right to it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Fred Breglia and Bob Graves are here on this gardening show on a beautiful summer day. Mame in Rensselaerville. Mame, you're first.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about... I think it's an invasive that has sort of taken over a garden. We moved to an old house that had beautiful gardens. They're quite established. But at some point, someone planted bishop's weed. And And I've tried and tried and tried to eradicate it, to rehab the gardens, and I'm not having any success, and I wonder if you could give me any tips as to how to get rid of it or minimize
the
spread.
Yep.
Before you start, what does bishop's weed look like, and why is it bad?
Well, you know, it's a low-growing ground cover. It's green.
Sometimes you'll see it
green and white, and the green and white one is actually a lot of times actually planted, and sometimes even the green one perhaps as well.
Yeah,
but
it's still sold.
Is that called Snow on the Mountain, the green and white one?
Could be. People call it different things.
Well, there's a few different plants out there with Snow on the Mountain, so some folks might call it that. That's not the one that we would call Snow on the Mountain.
All right,
but
so how do you get rid of Mame's bishop's weed?
And, I've been battling it probably you have, too. We've been battling it for most of our lives.
You can keep digging and digging and pulling and digging and pulling.
Yep. The good side is it comes out easy, so pulling. Continuously pulling, smothering whatever you can.
If it's solid in an area, you often advise putting down something like black plastic over it for a while.
That's right, because smothering it.
Well, that's what I thought I might do in the fall is try the black plastic.
Yeah, do it when it's still warm if you can.
No, it's not very attractive. Oh, really?
Yeah, when it's warm, it'll heat it up and it'll just cook it.
Yeah, if you can smother what you can. Also, a heavy-duty weed fabric would also serve the same purpose if you had that heavy-duty weed fabric or black plastic. But either way, you smother what you can. I mean, I've been working on, trying to get rid of bishop's weed, even Atlantis Arboretum.
Yeah.
We've had that. I've been there 23 years now, and it was certainly there when I got there. And, you know, all the hours and all the gardeners have put in, it's certainly still there.
Well, what's wrong with it?
It takes over.
I mean, is it green?
Yeah, some people like it.
Your gardens. If it's on, if it's in your lawn, it actually can be controlled very easily with mowing.
It could be my whole lawn.
You'll mow it. It'll actually go away, and grass will come in.
All right.
But if it's in the garden, you can't mow it.
This is in a a bed along the driveway.
Oh,
and it's rather shady.
Okay.
There are other things in there that I don't want to mow, but if mowing would work.
I would
get the other things out. And
take the other. That's perfectly reasonable. Take the other stuff out and keep mowing it, and it'll go away.
Yeah, if you continuously mow that, you'll wear it out, and then eventually other plants will probably start to fill that role.
Okay.
The hard thing is just if it's in the garden, just go after it. Keep going after it. There are some organic types of herbicides like agricultural type vinegars, which will burn it. It won't kill the root, but it might help with some of the amount of, pulling.
Basically,
it
does the same thing that mowing would. Kills the top, comes back.
It does.
Kills the top, comes
back. Thanks, man. But what would that do if it was in your garden? You wouldn't want to put the industrial vinegar in there.
Not if you've got other desirable things there.
No.
What does it look like?
It's sort of ornamental, which is how it ends up getting planted. It actually was, I think, originally brought over to the country because it was an ornamental of some sort. And the variegated one, which is white and green, is quite pretty. But the problem is that reverts. And it turns back to that sort of very aggressive green one. And it pulls out very easy. which would makes you think, wow, easy to control it. But every time you pull it out, you always leave a little piece of that root.
Yeah.
And that little root, you leave two little pieces. Now you got two little bishop's
weeds.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, let's go from bishop's weed over to Japanese knotweed. Chris in South Amherst. Chris, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
First time, long time. I am calling about the Japanese knotweed.
Oh, yeah.
We had it here when we moved into our place, and we thought, oh, here's some nice greenery that'll protect us from the road a little. And our neighbor has it going berserk in her yard.
Okay.
And the people from the town said, well, you have to wait for it to flower and then drench it with Roundup.
What? Cornell would recommend if you looked it up.
Really?
That would be one of the control. It's a very, very invasive plant, but there are other ways
to
control it.
Yeah, we've been fighting it for years at my house, Chris, and I'm going to back up what Fred is about to say.
Yeah, I've actually been battling another. That's another one of the ones at Arboretum that we've been battling for years. But I will say that it's a lot easier to control the Japanese knotweed than it is that bishop's weed, because same thing we talked about with the other caller, cutting. If you just keep cutting that, there's no chance that plant can grow. You'll wear it out. You'll win. Just don't let it keep building leaves. So when I say mow it, I mean it's going to get mowed right down. It's going to want to shoot itself back up. When it starts to get those leaves, you mow it again.
It's almost weekly with that. I mean,
probably weekly.
Every 2 weeks.
Yep, I would recommend mowing it low.
If it's not in a spot you can mow, you can just clip
cut it.
Yeah,
you can also hand weed that one. It actually is not like the bishop's weed, where if you pull it out, you break off a little fibrous roots. This actually has a real root mass.
You can dig it out.
So you can dig it out.
I heard you could not do that.
But you can.
I don't think your black plastic's going to work on that one, because I've seen it come up through blacktop. The stuff is really strong.
Yep. But it's not too hard to get rid of if you continuously go after it, especially if you can mow it. If it's in an area where you can mow, any area that we had it at the Arboretum where we can mow it, it's pretty much gone. The places where we still have it are in those weed beds, or I should say those, different areas, the nooks and crannies along.
And you really recommend mowing it first thing, too, when it's starting to grow in the spring.
I do. Yeah absolutely. You want to hit it early on in the spring, but if you haven't touched it this year yet, there's no better time than the present. Cut it back.
Yeah.
And keep cutting it back, and you will win it. You will win the battle.
It's going to be a long battle of attrition, though,
Could
Chris.
Be years.
So we'll talk to you on a future program. Take a break here. 800-348-2551. Bob Graves and Fred Breglia here. It's The Gardening Show. We'll be back. That's nice. That's Pete Levin doing some funky bumper music on the Vox Pop today. Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Bob Graves here to answer your gardening questions. And Fred, there are things happening at the Landis Arboretum that we need to know about.
There are. There's literally always something going on there. We're really busy, and it's been a really great year. But it's sort of like one event ends, and we're open for the other one. So the upcoming big one that we're sort of planning for right now is our 13th Perennial Forest 5K Cross Country Run / Walk. And that's going to be scheduled for August 10th. The race starts at 9. I believe registration starts right around 8 o'clock. The first 100 people that register will end up getting a Landis Arboretum 5K commemorative T-shirt.
Oh, nice.
I won't spoil the no spoilers as to what the color will be this year. We do a different color every single year. And if you place, you end up getting these wood medals that we make out of different trees throughout the Landis Arboretum.
Wooden medals.
We have wooden medals, yep.
Wow.
People are really starting to collect them, and it's been really popular.
Cool.
So
yeah.
Register,
that's
go to our website.
That's a contradiction in terms.
A wooden medal. Well, medal is M-E-D, so maybe not.
Yeah, M-E-D, you're
M-E-D,
right.
that's right.
It's not a metal medal.
No.
Wooden medal.
We used to do the regular metal medals.
Right.
We switched over.
Suddenly it's an Abbott and Costello routine.
Oh, here we go.
We'll cancel the show.
Who's on first?
We're trying to make up for Greg.
So you're doing a 5K run. Now, in this 5K run, number one, you have to check yourself for ticks at the end. But two, no, yeah?
I would say, anytime you're outdoors, in New York State at this point, anywhere in the East Coast, you're probably just good idea. We don't have nearly as many ticks as a lot of other sites. I will say that. But we do recommend you always check yourself.
All right. And is it any uphill or is it flat?
No, it's definitely not flat. Yeah. It's a challenging 5K.
Okay.
Some people say it's one of their favorites. Most of those people are definitely runners, and
they're
they
fit.
Enjoy the
yes.
challenge. Yep. But you don't have to run it. You can walk it. And we have different age categories, and we give a prize for the top in every age category, including the overall winner.
Yeah.
And you can go to our website, landisarboretum.org, for the registration. You can also visit our Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/LandisArb. The 5K on August 10th starts at 9. Registration at 8.
Can I do it in my truck?
We'll talk.
All right, because I could just trail behind the runners and give them a little motivation to keep moving. This email came in from Wayne in Stone Ridge. Wayne says, I have several old blueberry bushes that I want to move. Most are about 40 years old or older. How should I go about moving them, and when is the best time? And that's from Wayne.
Not now.
No, you want to move them during the dormant season. In other words, when the leaves have all fallen off and the plant's asleep, or before the leaves actually come out in the spring.
Probably doesn't make much difference, do you think, whether it's first thing in the spring before the leaves or in the fall after the leaves?
You know, with blueberries, I don't think it's a huge deal. Some things are really picky, you know, fall dig or spring dig. But I think blueberry, as long as you're dormant and you get a good-sized root ball, and when I say good-sized, I mean basically, you know, if they're old, 40-year-old, big as you can lift. They don't need to be overly deep, because most of the roots on all these plants are about 15 inches at the most under the ground.
It's good to take some of the oldest wood out, too, if you're going to do that. Trim out some of the oldest, gnarliest, and promote some new wood coming up.
That's right.
And when is the best time?
For moving, dormant season. You want to make sure.
After, before or after? October or.
Yeah, after the leaves are gone or before they come out. So you either do it later fall or early spring. And then in terms of pruning them, we like to always sort of prune those, you know, typically before growth occurs. So it's a springtime prune.
All right. Roger that.
Other than that, pretty straightforward.
Back to the calls. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alan in Palatine Bridge, you're on.
Hi, guys. I have a 12-foot apple tree that I've been nursing for a while. It just started to bear fruit about 4 years ago, and I'm a little concerned now. It's listing at about a 45-degree angle. It looks strong, and it seems like it's strong in the ground, but I was wondering if there's a way to bring it back up to about, you know, perpendicular with the ground. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, you could stake that.
Yep.
There's a bunch of different ways to do it. You know, you could take a big stake that you drive in the ground, or you could put a ground anchor in like they use for anchoring telephone poles. And it'd probably be something, Fred, that he'd do gradually, right? You wouldn't try to bring that all the way back up at once.
You got it. You got it, Bob. Yeah, no, you want to do it a little bit at a time. You'll feel the resistance.
Yeah.
And you sort of push it and you tie your stakes. I typically use, like, if I'm going to try to pull a tree, you might end up using two stakes or two ground anchors. So you sort of triangulate to that trunk. And just, you know, have somebody, you know, work with somebody with you there. Just have them push the tree a little bit. You take up the slack. And you'll see it. It'll start to get hard. If you're hearing, like, you know, wood starting to crack, you're going way too hard at once. But as long as you're willing to do this a little at a time, a week later, go back out, push it a little bit more, tighten up the stakes a little bit more. A couple weeks later, do it again. Over the course of the season, you should be able to get that tree, especially at the age that it is, to be, you know, fairly straight again.
Yep. The old-fashioned way of doing that is with a wire or a cable through a hose. But you don't want anything on the trunk that's going to abrade the trunk.
Right.
And there's a product out now called Arbor Tie, which is a fabric that works really well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But if you do have an old garden hose.
Exactly what I was wondering. Thank you very much. Great. Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Good luck.
Thanks for the call. Now, you know, if that tree is now suddenly at 45 degrees, isn't that indicative of maybe some settling of the ground?
It could also be wind.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Wind will do it.
Yep, and you could have it. What happens is it doesn't just sort of magically do that. It happens when the ground's really, really wet, and this spring was really, really wet.
And it could be just the weight if there's more fruit on one side than another.
Yep, and you know, real soggy ground, it starts to move a little bit, wind pushes it, and then once the ground sort of settles, now it's like really fixed there. And, but you can straighten them back out.
All right, our number here is 800-348-2551. Marla in Falls Village, Connecticut, you're on.
It's a great show.
Thank
you. And I know you'll have the answer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
Now you're giving them real anxiety, Marla, just saying.
Oops.
All right, go ahead.
It's a plant that grows, it's a wildflower that grows about 6 to 10 feet high. It's a tubular stem. And in the day it kind of droops, and then at night it pops up.
Oh.
And then it has a pink snapdragon flower that bees and hummingbirds go crazy for.
It's like a bee balm or something?
I've been to the
I don't think it sounds like it's awful big for what you're.
Yeah, 6 to 8.
Okay, now.
Yeah, it does get very high.
They're raising their eyebrows. So Fred is actually cheating. I don't usually condone our guests using electronic devices to come up with answers. But in this case, Marla.
You know, the height makes me think of Joe Pieweed, but.
That was actually the first thing I was going to say, but it doesn't really have the Snapdragon.
That, kind of
that was
power.
My friend. That's in the bloom kind of right around now.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to send a
send
photo
us a picture,
to us,
yeah.
Fred@LandisArboretum.org or Bob.
At Fadigan's.
Nursery.com.
So
okay.
Bob,
If we have a photo, I think it'd be pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Or, I mean, Marla, if you're really feeling motivated, take a picture of it now and send it to voxpop@wamc.org, and I'll run it by the fellas before 3 o'clock here.
Yeah.
Well, I have the motivation, but I don't have the means to
photograph. All right. So
okay. Story of my life.
We'll check our emails and send that to us, and we'll get that identified for you.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Thanks
enjoy the day.
You
yeah,
got
you
it.
Too.
Yeah, it's
Thanks
a beautiful a day. You too.
All right, over to Patricia in Putnam. Hello, Patricia in Putnam.
Hello.
Hello.
I have three issues, and I know I could use plastic, and I know I could use cartons, but I don't want to destroy the dandelion for my bunny. Creeping Jenny or Creeping Charlie, what a mess.
Uh-oh. Creeping Jenny, Creeping Charlie.
North, south, east, west on my property. I have it, along with poison ivy.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Now, Patricia, while they're answering here, I think we're hearing perhaps the radio in the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
sorry about that. Sorry.
Okay. You know, the traditional way is to use a broadleaf weed killer for that, but it's going to kill any broadleaf weed, which would include dandelions or clovers. That's a really tough weed to control. I don't know that there's going to be an organic. You know, there are some organic broadleaf weed killers that are iron-based, but they don't have it out yet in a form where you could do a large area. And, again, it's going to kill any broadleaf weed that it hits.
Hmm.
Any thoughts, Fred?
Yeah, you know, you could certainly try. I mean, hand-pulling it is certainly effective, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time.
That's what I'm doing now.
And then, you know, like
and
we said,
it's a nightmare.
Yeah. It is. It's you know, the poison ivy part of it is not very hard. That one, actually, if you can just cut it, and keep cutting it. That one goes real easy. It's very easy to get rid of.
Even destroy the root, just cutting the poison ivy?
Yeah, just cut it. It'll destroy the root, absolutely, because that's a woody plant that really, really needs to store a lot of energy. And if you just keep cutting that and don't let it get leaves to photosynthesize, it can't make food, and it's real easy to starve. The poison ivy, very easy to starve out. I've controlled large and almost any woody plant that it's in a spot where you don't want it. Same exact thing. Now, if you did start early in the spring, prior to when the first leaves come out on those plants, and then cut them, that means they put that first set of leaves on from stored energy. So then they count on those leaves photosynthesizing to create the rest of the food that it does that it needs to live. So if you let it use that stored energy out, and this goes with any woody plant, and cut it right after that flush, that plant has no ability to keep making food, and that you win real easy.
Yeah, here's the other issue. I have this. I got the best thing I can describe it is a large leaf ivy, and it crawls underground just like Creeping Jenny, and then it hits a tree and it climbs up a tree.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Virginia creeper.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Ivy. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know what that is, but boy, that also is. It travels underground, and that also is hard.
That's that's another woody one. If you just keep cutting it,
It's a woody one.
Yep. Do you know if it has a does it turn red in the fall color? You know.
I don't know.
Okay. It sounds like Virginia creeper.
I'll look it up. Virginia.
Yeah, it sounds like it. The good news is that's a native. And it's not really invasive, and it doesn't actually. There are some vines that we call killers,
stranglers.
And bittersweet, the Oriental bittersweet, classic example of an invasive plant that's a killer vine.
Virginia creeper has 5 leaves, and that helps you. Yeah.
No, this has 3.
That's Boston ivy.
So then it's Boston ivy.
Yeah.
Is that good?
That's also good. Yeah. In fact, if you go to Harvard, any of the Boston
Ivy
schools, that's what
the Ivy League
is, the Ivy League. All the buildings are covered with Boston ivy. It doesn't destroy the brick.
No, it's not like that. It's got three points to it. It's not like, I'm calling it an ivy because it's a climber, and I don't know what else to call that leaf.
Do you think that might be poison ivy?
No, it's not poison
ivy. Okay, because that will climb.
It's a huge leaf.
Sounds like Boston ivy.
Sounds like Boston ivy to us. If you wanted to send a photo, we would certainly be able to ID it and give you more insight.
Could you slowly say your email address?
Very slowly, Fred.
It's Fred at Landis Arboretum, LANDISARBOROR ETUM.
ARBOROR ETUM.
.org.
Where?
.org.
LandisArboretum.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I will do that when I get to the library.
Okay.
I will have to take a picture first.
All cool. Right.
Well, but I would appreciate it because that's another. Between these three, I go. My fingers actually in the morning, I can't close them because I'm doing so much pulling.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, goats will eat this, right? Maybe she should get a goat?
Well, they say goats leave almost anything vegetated.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
This is not the animal husbandry hour.
Right? All right, fine. Well, Patricia, we got to go here, but thank you for the call. 800-3- You're not being very agreeable, Bob. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bruce in Albany downtown or downtown Albany. Bruce, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon to the panel. Just a shout-out to Fred and his pruning class, which I took this spring. Excellent class. The only criticism I would have is that 2 days instead of one, he throws a lot of information at us.
Well, thanks a real lot. I'll consider that 2-day seminar for next year.
Okay. Thank you.
And here's my question. I was checking with my dad, who, when he retired, the first thing he did was get his Master Gardener certificate. From the Cornell Cooperative Extension. And I said, well, I have some trees, and I need to prune them in the proper direction so they do what they need to do when they're a little older. And he says, well, I'm a master gardener. I do shrubs and flowers and vegetables. What you really need is a certified arborist. And I said, what's that? And he kind of laughed and never really answered the question. I'm hoping the panelists can tell me a little about what that profession is, what they do.
Yeah,
sure. Fred is an arborist.
Yeah, I'm a certified arborist.
He's certifiable.
And I'm certifiable, that's for sure.
Go ahead. Ooh, talk about
it. Well, you know, look what happens when Greg misses
Greg's
one
not
show
here to
and
mellow
to,
things
to
out.
Mellow things out. We got us three. All right, real quick. I am a certified arborist. It's a program that's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, which is one of the leading tree information organizations in the world. They're a not-for-profit. They're dedicated to coming up with their current best methodologies for, you know, dealing with trees in all aspects, everything from healthcare to pruning, planting, long-term care,
and
we're involved.
Where people can find an arborist too, don't you?
They definitely do. Yep. So there's a main site, and they put it out in terms of to become a certified arborist. I'll just back up really quickly.
Yeah.
You have to put quite a bit of knowledge into it. You have to actually go and apply and actually be accepted to take a test. Then you actually take the test, and you have to pass every single section, because if you fail a section, you actually have to retake the thing.
Oh, man.
So you got to pass all the sections, and then every 3 years we have to get a bunch of credits to maintain our certification. Now, what does that mean to the public? Well, that means that, you know, if you call a certified arborist, we're actually probably the most up-to-date crew in terms of knowing, you know, the right ways to do things. Now, does that mean if you don't, you know, if you're not an arborist, you're not good? No, not at all. There is I know a tremendous amount of people that are really, really good, and they're not arborists. But how does the public know? Well, it's hard to know unless you actually know someone. So a good way, if you don't know, to get your trees worked on by a professional is get a certified arborist, because they have to go through those credentials and they have to be qualified. And you can go online to a website that the International Society of Arboriculture set up for the public, and it's called treesaregood.org.
Okay.
And you can go to Trees Are Good, and you type in certified arborist, and they'll give like a zip code search, and they'll tell you all the certified arborists in your area. It'll come up, and you can call. I always recommend getting more than one estimate anyways, but the good news is that if a certified arborist is working on your trees, I do think, you know, you're going to get the quality work that you're going to
get. There are some industry certifications that don't mean anything, but
right.
This one does.
This one really does. It's like it's just a higher level, and it's like one of those things that I honestly wish, you know, it was probably more required by a lot of people because it would actually just create a higher level standard. It's,
how many arborists are there?
You know, there's quite a few throughout the country, but there's not a real lot, you know, not a real lot of us. So we need more. So, you know, any youth, any you know, college kids out there, you know, children that are thinking about, you know, careers, arborists, we're in need.
I mean, after all the testing, is there like a secret initiation or anything?
No.
Drink,
I will say that
the blood of a tree or anything?
Nothing like that. But, right, I will say that the test was pretty, you know, pretty extensive. That's anyone that wants more info, go to the website online. They'll give you it all.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Fred, certified arborist, Breglia is here. And Bob, he's like an amateur arborist. Graves also here as well. Vox Pop Gardening today. I want to apologize to Bob Graves. He is a brilliant person from Fadigan's Nursery. And, he's not a certified arborist, but that doesn't mean he doesn't know arboring things, right?
That's right.
All right.
Years of experience.
Did I cover my
40? Years of experience.
40 plus of hands in the dirt.
It's what it says in the script. Hands in the dirt. Gardener. Okay. This email came in from Anna. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Tree services routinely recommend application of systemic insecticide on older trees, specifically for aphids on beech, black vine weevils on ship's laurel, and cottony camilla scale and lace bugs on crabapple. Would you recommend such treatments? Would more organic methods such as neem oil be effective?
You know, there's a lot of different options. It really comes down to, I think, a lot of times there's two sort of thresholds when you talk about pest management. There's an aesthetic threshold and there's an economic threshold. And at the Arboretum, we certainly never treat on anything that's what we call the aesthetic threshold. Now, what is that really quickly? It basically means that the pest is feeding on your plant and it's doing damage and it's making it unsightly, but it doesn't affect the plant's health. So we don't really, something's eating our leaves. We're not really too worried about it. We only get really worried about it when it starts to affect the plant's health. Then you have the economic threshold, which is when the pest or disease is affecting that plant to the point where it actually is going to cause a loss or either to part of that plant or all of it. And that is the part where you would have to manage it and do some treatment. So it really depends on the pest. Aphids, I don't think, unless it was a very small plant, it wouldn't be systemically injecting it for trees.
Aphids don't really cause unsightly again.
Unsightly. It's like an aesthetic threshold.
You know, the systemic is used prophylactically sometimes to put on something just in case. And you're better off, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yep.
Okay.
And there's other ways to treat a lot of things. And if you needed a systemic, you'd like to save that for when you really have a problem, with a woolly hemlock adelgid.
Absolutely. It's kind of like an antibiotic. When you go to a doctor, how often do they give you antibiotics? Well, if you're getting a really good doctor, I think they're probably not going to give it to you very often. Yeah. In fact, they'll even let the infection even run itself a little bit. But once it gets to that point where, it could affect the human life, then, of course, they're right on that, and then it's more effective that way. So I don't recommend any time just, blanket spraying or using any kind of systemics. Let's diagnose the problem accurately and then prescribe a treatment.
All right, fair enough.
Like a doctor, only for plants.
Fred Breglia is here. Bob Graves is here. And let's go to line 7 and Barbara in Glenville. Barbara, you're on.
Oh, hi. Just wanted to call in about our rhododendrons, which are becoming thinner and thinner over the last few years. Mm-hmm. The branches are kind of spindly. They're losing their leaves. The leaves tend to be sort of a brown-green a little bit of the time. The plant does bloom, but not copious blooms. And so we just wondered if we can help it.
Has anything changed in that area? Has it gotten more shady or less shady? Anything drainage changed?
No. There's some that are out in pretty much full sun, and then some that are closer to the house that would get some shade, but they seem to be
doing
the same thing.
Okay. First thing I do is check the pH. Rhododendrons like an acidic soil, really below 6, somewhere in the 5.5, 5.6 range. And what happens if the pH is too high, if it's too alkaline, say it's up in the 7s or close to 8, is that the soil becomes functionally infertile. And what I mean by that is it's as if you're at a buffet table with tape on your mouth. The nutrients are in the soil, but the plant can't get it if the pH is off. So get that checked first. Fertilizing certainly will help, but if the pH is off, 80% of your fertilizer is ineffective. Check the pH, fertilize them with an organic, like an acid-loving fertilizer. But check that pH first and then fertilize them.
All right. Do you think it could be maybe a borer in there, too?
Could check be the a stems. Borer. Usually borer will kill some branches rather than just weaken the whole thing. Could be weevil if there's some notching in the leaves. Weevil eats the roots. That could weaken them.
What does a weevil look like?
It's a little beetle with a short, stubby nose, but you never see them.
Really?
Because they only come out at
night. Yeah, they're nocturnal.
You ever hear that Teresa Brewer song, Bull Weevil?
Bull Weevil.
You want to sing a little bit of that, Bob?
No, thanks.
Okay. You think we could use a trail cam to catch one of those weevils?
You don't want me to sing.
No, you know what? Barbara, thank you for the call. I forget I mentioned it.
This is getting out of hand.
Let's go to Kathy. Really, well, it was warm in here.
That's what happened.
Rapidly losing consciousness. Kathy and Seward, you're on.
Hi. I've got a vine, and I'm guessing it's this Virginia creeper stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's the leaf has, like, at the stem, it's got two points and then bigger ones coming out below that and then a much longer one below. The 5 points are not equal sized.
Well, that's possible. It has five leaves. It's a compound leaf.
No, not leaves. This is one leaf on the vine.
Does it look like five little leaflets to comprise one leaf, or no?
No, it looks like one solid leaf.
Okay, so then that is not Virginia creeper. It could be a grapevine if it's one big fat leaf and it has like three lobes or sort of like lobes. And maybe the other woman that was called in
could
before, I was thinking maybe that could be a grape as well because that does have a big fat leaf.
With
it. So it could be a grape.
Can you eat those?
Oh, they're terrible.
They're
are
not
they?
Really. Yeah, you wouldn't. They're not
you
very
could,
palatable.
But you wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, survival. If you had to.
Okay. Well, I think we have had some grapevines around here in the past, but it seems to be running rampant.
Huh. Yeah, it could. You know, it's
all
got a wildlife benefit, but
my kind of poorly maintained area.
Yeah, if it is a grape, it'll have a slump somewhat. If you can see the main trunk of that vine as it gets to the ground and it's kind of fat, it would be kind of a shaggier bark.
Shaggy bark, yeah.
And if you could actually see how it attaches itself to things, it would be a little tendril or a little
twirly.
Squiggly, corkscrewy type.
There are tendrils.
Then it's definitely a grape.
Underground?
Yeah, it could.
Subterranean grapes.
You know, to pop up here and then there. And
it could.
Okay.
It could. Yep.
That's
and
another
if you,
one with
all right.
You cut it.
And the question about it is one of them has decided to climb up my telephone line that's attached to the house and runs down to the box.
Yeah.
Okay. You might.
You think that's going to be a problem?
Well, if it's a wild grape, it's probably going to, get larger than you're going to want it. You're probably not going to want to leave it on a telephone wire right next to your house if
Why?
It's a wild grape because it's going to get big.
Right,
it's
you know,
big.
This is the wire that's actually attached to the house.
They can go
coming up from the ground below
60 feet.
Really?
Yeah, 80 feet. I've seen them 100 feet tall.
Just cut it off at the base. Just cut it off.
I mean, as long as it's not making long-distance calls, I think it's okay, right?
I think they did away with that, Ray, a long time ago.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm a little...
If you wanted to get rid of it, like Bob said, you just cut it at the base. It might resucker, and then any little regrowth you cut. Now, yanking it out of the wire could be a problem because if it's all tendrilled up, you actually might be pulling your wire too hard.
Yeah,
in which case, you might
want to
consider
that.
Calling the phone or telephone company.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you...
Yet. I think I can get it, but you advise, getting it off the wire.
I don't think I would leave it right next to your house like
that.
Will it damage the house?
It's not going to be a real damager, but if it starts to get, again, up under some of those little runners, up under your siding or up under your roof, it's probably not a good thing where it is. I like wild grape. I think it has a great ecological role in our landscape. It's a great wildlife plant in the right spot.
I will leave it out in the wild and not on my house.
You got it. I think that's a good plan.
And I hate to ask you for two things, but I need, and you might have addressed this earlier because I wasn't listening right away when you started.
Okay.
But that poison parsnip stuff.
Okay.
That is so invasive, and what's is that just a cut it, get rid of it thing or?
If you can mow it, it'll go. If you can mow it, you do want to be careful because if you get the juice on you, it's definitely phototoxic. It gets
I have. Been cutting this stuff for a very long time, and I've never gotten a rash.
Well,
I don't think everybody reacts to it. I think I do not.
Well, if you get it in your eyes, though, it's a bad thing, right?
It's bad. If you get it on your skin, the thing is, if you get it on you and you go in and take a shower, you're probably going to be okay. But if you get the juice on you and you stay out there in the sun, it needs the sun to react to it. Yeah. And it will cause pretty severe burns. And I've actually been burned up myself. I know people that have actually got it even worse.
Wow. Okay.
And then its big cousin is the giant hogweed, and that is the same kind of plant, only way more potent.
Right.
But it, you know, use caution, and mowing or continuously cutting that, it definitely doesn't live in an area that can be mowed. So
okay.
you would win if you can mow it.
All right, let's go to George in
East
Hampton.
Using caution.
George, you're on.
Hey there. I got two things. One, the first one's an observation. So I water my garden. I have a wonderful vegetable garden, and I water it with the hose as needed, and I know how to water. I do deep root watering.
Great.
And I don't overwater.
Okay,
but
great.
What I notice is that when it rains, the next day, my garden looks spectacular. When I water with the hose, it's just normal. Huh. What do you think about that?
Well, you're probably getting a more thorough, possibly, here's a few ideas. Are you watering with the hose as an overhead type situation?
No, I only do hand watering because of waste.
And it's not getting all, is it getting all the foliage wet, or is it just generally kind of, you're kind of more careful underneath the plants?
No, I only go underneath the plant,
okay.
And I make sure that I do a whole span way around it, and I actually double water sometimes to make sure that it leaches in well.
Okay, so you're definitely watering very well. That's excellent.
Sometimes, though, when you're standing there with a hose, it's really hard to get enough. I'd almost rather do a soaker hose. It goes real slow, and because you're doing it quick, I mean, you're not standing there for 2 or 3 hours.
I water for hours. I love to water.
Oh, okay.
therapeutic.
All right. Well, when you get a real soaking rain, you're not just getting around the plants, you're getting all out and around, and a lot of times those plants will have little fibrous roots, so they're going to get, you know, clearly a good soaking rain is going to do more than, you know, hand watering. The other thing that happens, and everything that you're mentioning with the way you water is really good, better than the average, you know, person that we sort of talk to in terms of, you know, really getting an understanding of the watering. But, and I do agree that, you know, you don't want to get the foliage all wet when you water because that could spread diseases. But every once in a while, rains, when they come, obviously they're getting everything soaked. And washing those leaves every once in a while is actually a really good thing for the plant, too. And that might be why you just kind of like, but if you made it your regular watering practice, you would have more problems than not. So continue what you're doing.
I thought maybe it was something removed in the city process compared to nutrients that may be in the rain. That's all.
Yeah. No, I think you're really just getting a heavier water. You're feeding all those little microfibrous roots that are stretched out probably beyond the scope of your watering.
Yeah.
And then those leaves are absorbing water literally through their little pores, their stomates. And so they're getting and they're getting cleaned out. The pores get kind of clogged. And so I think it's going to be hard to beat the rain. Unless it doesn't stop.
All right, George, we got to move it along here, but I know you have a second question, so let's make it quick, okay?
Okay. The other question is, I get beautiful grapes every year. Right now, I have beautiful grapes on a fence, and they're gorgeous underneath the leaves and everything. In a month, these things are going to lose 95% of them, and I'm going to end up with 5 grapes on each of the stands. What's going on?
That's
they turn silver.
That's a fungus problem.
That's a fungus?
That's a fungus problem. You know, that's why grapes are often grown in areas where there's hills because there's more air movement and you get better drying. So you can use some organic fungicides for that. There are 2 or 3 different ones if you go to Cornell's site. But you're going to need to spray that to eliminate that problem.
And that would be something he would have to do from the beginning of the season.
You
got to
do it before
Bob?
The problem.
So it's too late now?
Yeah, you could do it now, but it's getting late.
All right, Kathleen in Voorheesville. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi. I believe I'm having a problem with white flies. I found initially almost like snow around my plants, mostly by raspberries, and then like little worms on the stalks, and they do fly. So I've been spraying them with neem oil, and I wanted to see if you had any suggestions.
Okay.
The worms are not associated with the white fly. That's something else. White fly, usually, you know, we were talking about whether this is really dangerous to a plant or unsightly. White fly doesn't usually cause a decline in the raspberries.
Not usually. It's more of a problem with interiors.
Yeah, indoor plants.
Indoor plants is a nuisance, yeah.
The difficulty with controlling it with neem is a contact killer. You don't hit it, you don't kill it. any oil like that or soap. But the worms you should be able to get. I mean, if you contact those, you'd be okay. The problem with white flies is they move. As soon as you start to spray, they're flying around.
And I tend to think, like Bob said, you know, the white fly wouldn't cause enough problems. I mean, a little bit of aesthetic here or there, but not enough of a problem on an outdoor. I think that if you're having issues, those little worms are probably the more the target.
Usually predators will take care of, predator insects will take care of some of these things.
Could you take a shot back to the plant and suck up the white flies?
I don't think I've ever heard that done before.
No,
but you know, I have seen people.
Oh,
I have seen people blast
it
with sometimes blasting plants
water.
With water.
Yeah,
is a good way of environmentally control.
You know,
I use that a lot.
I got to tell you, I thought that was a great idea. Bob looked at me like maybe that wasn't the best idea. I got to be honest.
Well, we're being honest here.
I'm going
today.
To leave this to the professionals from now on.
Call an arborist.
Marilyn in Lake George, you're on. Marilyn, go ahead. Hello.
Hi. You mentioned Oriental bittersweet, and it's trying to take over part of our yard. Is there any way to get to kill the roots besides Roundup? We have well water, and we're close to Lake George.
Yeah, I would
so
not
want to use that.
I wouldn't use Roundup. I would just keep cutting it. Just keep cutting it. You'll win if you keep cutting it. The best time to get it is in the spring. Any woody plant you want to get rid of, it'll flush out with foliage in the spring. Cut it immediately. It has no food.
Keep cutting.
But if you're obviously, you know, we're past the spring now, and there's no better time than the present. Cut it, and you're going to see regrowth. Cut the regrowth. You're going to see some more regrowth. Cut the regrowth again. You're going to win. Keep going. You'll beat it.
Marilyn, thanks a lot. And just a reminder.
No sprays needed.
Zach, the engineer, looking pained. Just a reminder to callers to turn your radio down when you go on the air. Otherwise, Zach, he gets very upset. He swears. Peter in Kingston. Peter, you're on.
Hi. Just want to quick say about the, before I ask my question, about the knotweed. That the first 2 weeks of the year, I pick the knotweed. I make knotweed rhubarb. It has all these incredible healing properties. So I know it's an invasive plant, but it also has some good qualities to it.
Well, we'll do a foraging show someday.
It's also really good for bees. It makes great honey.
It was actually brought over originally for culinary purposes, I believe.
All be dipped. All right, you have a question? We only have about a minute.
Yes. Yeah. So I have in my courtyard garden, I've got some fruit trees. I've got two, and I've never sprayed. I've got two peach trees and a newer one's newer, one's older, and I have a newer apple tree. The peaches over the years, because I never sprayed, they started getting this, I don't know, some kind of fungus where by the time the moment they come out, they get a bug or something on it, and then they rot right on the vine. And I have maybe a handful of peaches a year, and I'm down to a handful of peaches. I'm worried about, I have with the apple tree, it's got a rust on the leaves, and this year the apples are out, but I noticed that one of them was all shriveled on the, it's all already shriveled up.
I'm
wondering, is it?
It's really difficult to grow good fruit without doing some spraying. Other parts of the country, it's easier, but with the climate that we have, particularly the heat and the moisture, and there are organics. You know, sulfur is a great organic fungicide, which you need to start early. There are some other ones. But if you're going to get good quality fruit out of a peach or an apple, it's almost impossible without doing some spraying.
So is it possible that the same things that was in my peach has now infected my apple?
No, you've got a couple of different things going on there. The apple with a rust is a fungus. It creates a little bit of orange spots. The fruit that you're talking about that looks mummified or something is a different type of fungus. That's probably a black rot.
Okay.
And then, you know, the peaches could also get a peach leaf curl. Okay. So they're corona-specific. A lot of those organic multi-tiered sprays often cover a lot of different ones. But, you know, certainly check with the garden center. That's reputable when you buy that.
Gentlemen, this was so much fun. Bob Graves and Fred. Why do you laugh? Bob Graves and
Fred
Breglia for being here today. The Gardening Show, successful And remember, if you're making the Japanese knotweed salad, you know, look it up first. Make sure you don't kill yourself with it. Hey, you really can eat that stuff, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think the ultimate payback is not only with an invasive plant, is not only just pull it out, but if you can eat it too.
Hey,
it's taking invasive control to a whole nother level.
It's good for dandelions, too.
Yeah, garlic mustard's great eating, too.
All right, the show's over. support comes from Lakeview Orchard, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. You pick on pre-picked tree fruits. Berries, pies, pastries, cider, donuts, kalumki, pierogi, kapusta, and kielbasa, lakevieworchard.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, careersintransition, LLC.com. Thanks to Fred and Bob and Zach and Jackie and... whoever. Tomorrow on the show, it's Food Friday at 2 o'clock, and right now... The Capital Connection.